What's on your mind today before we get started here?
No, I don't think Barry's on yet, but that just seems to be a catalyst for part of our issues. But move onward and upward.
I would tell you that, you know, we should report in based on the 5-star model. But that may be a challenge unto itself, right?
Yeah.
Are you talking about covering the 5-star with you today?
Right. I mean, I'm really having breakthrough success using the 5-star model. Meaning people are really making a lot of progress. Now, these aren't teams that I've been coaching forever, but they're teams that, you know, they're in month three. I just got done with a team that's in week 8 and they're reporting in based on the 5-star model, and we're having really great success with it. In terms of getting the team, they met for an hour before the call. They went through everything so that when they report to me, they really have their act together. And the last week, they didn't. I mean, so they really worked hard this week to get themselves up and organized and running. So I was very, very pleased. So, you know, the other team is, you know, they're working on things like making sure that their investment process is consistent across the board and that they're getting the kind of leverage that they should in terms of the investment process. You know, the planning.
Larry, it's Alex.
They're leaving.
So, you know, each star is having its success in terms of leveraging the team, and their marketing effort is going very well and so forth. So, you know, they're not all in the same place. They're all in weirdly different places, but, it seems to be a great way to report in, and then you see easily see where the holes are in the process. So that's why I mentioned it.
Okay. Well, I can tell you from a marketing standpoint, we do have a brochure done that's taken us 3 years to get accomplished. We're working on the website now, and which hopefully will be accomplished this month. And then we are also have some marketing pieces done on some of our PM models as well.
Right.
So we have been able to make some distinct inroads in that aspect. Speaking of that,
yeah.
Ryan and Tim, have you any thoughts as far as making a marketing piece for the allocation models or the new model?
No. Allocation models, we need to discuss whether we're going to continue to go with those or if we're going to kind of phase them out and just work into the other models and use the other models to build whatever allocation we want. So I think that that's something that we need to talk about as a team. I think that Tim finally did the marketing piece. That was something that we were waiting on 4 years for Barry to do, which is shame on us. So we did it. So Tim's got that done. In terms of leveraging the managed money programs and stuff, I think we're doing a good job of that. We're up to 375 discretionary PM accounts. We just crossed 100 million in that. And we have about 200 million managed. So, a lot of the other managed is with separate account managers that doesn't require a great deal of adjusting or effort to those. So we are doing a good job of scaling the practice. The best one on the team at that has been Barry. Barry is almost completely automated his book. So he really does not have to do much on a day-to-day basis, which we're very aware of. The next phase of evolution is getting him to apply all that free time that he's created towards productive endeavors. But right now, admittedly, his father has taken up a good bit of his bandwidth. So we're trying to figure out how to handle that situation. In terms of what we're doing as a team, business is up. We're all up 25% or more in revenue in a year where the market's really not up that much. So we're very excited about that. I mean, Dow's down 2, S&P's up 5.5, and we're up 25 to 35. So business has been huge, and we're facing bottlenecks in terms of just opening accounts and ACATing assets and doing all these good things. Larry and I, how many accounts did we just move over to you, Tim? We just moved.
Yeah, it was good, maybe 25 total.
So Larry probably moved 17 or 18 households. I probably moved 7 or 8 households over. Barry hasn't done much with that. I personally challenged him one-on-one online to do that. And he's like, I don't have anyone. And I named like 3 people off the top of my head. So hopefully he'll be following through on that soon. A lot of the hangups still come from us jockeying for a position in terms of revenues are only benchmark to track. So, everything's been hesitant to give up any revenue. I should say everyone, but that seems to be a big sticking point for our team that we keep coming back to in terms of how do we actually quantify each person's contribution to the team. At the end of the year, I'm sure we'll have another discussion and I'm sure that'll be fun. But, we keep coming back to how do we really measure it? And how do we enforce things? And we have to do some type of compensation plan that's going to passively enforce the rules we want to, I believe. We're not going to guilt trip anyone. We're not going to challenge anyone or force them to do anything. I think it's just a question of we need to figure out a way to devise our comp to where it rewards the good behavior, and the people who aren't doing the good behavior don't get rewarded as much, and move forward that way. Whether that's, you get to keep 70% of the revenue on new business for 2 years, or whether that's, something where you're not punishing the other person or taking away from them what's theirs, they're just not participating as much if they don't want to get on board. We've had some discussions about like what would be the optimal or the optimization of our human capital, like as a theoretical. Would we be better off as a team if Tim and Barry were just out hunting all the time and then weren't responsible for handling relationships? And, Larry and I and somebody else handled relationships and, grew those relationships. Barry is very good at the hunt, but once that's over, he loses interest very easily. So he doesn't have as much bandwidth on the relationship side of the fence, whereas like I'm the opposite where I hate the hunt. But once I have somebody, I'm able to get a ton more out of it. But once again, then we get in trouble with quantifying the contributions to the team. And so much of what we seem to come back to is the distrust amongst the group of each person's pulling their weight and each person's rowing in the same direction versus, compensation and standing within the team and everything. So that's a recurring theme.
Yeah, but I don't think it's I don't think there's a I don't think it's everybody that has that. I think it's just one person that has that.
let's concentrate just kind of on where we are, if you don't mind. I think you guys sound like you got a handle on working out that part. When we go to the different models, like planning, Tim, are you in charge of planning for the team, or is Ryan, or who?
I'm the five-star person for planning, but Tim helps with a lot of the plans.
Okay. So where are we on planning?
We have our penetration. We have about 120 clients covered out of about 250, I believe, off the top of my head. You know, we probably need to go back and revisit it. We had a big push at the beginning of last year, and we probably need to go back and update some of those things. And we have had some new clients come on, like the one out in California, that we need to do a plan for, because we'll actually get paid more on them too, on a new relationship that's over a couple million where we do a plan. So we're leaving money on the table there. We'd like to get everyone who is a client to have a plan. That's a big push of our management. And that's something that I know they're striving for. That's something that they're really harping on. So we should reprioritize that, I guess, would be the best way to say it.
Yeah, and you know, that's Supernova, right? Every client begins with a plan. And we offer multi-generational financial planning with full implementation of that plan through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to your problem. So planning is integral. That's where we get the agenda. That's where we, you know, that's what we do. When you're presenting the five-star model, remember, when you present it, you want to talk to the clients or the centers of influence about why you are different. Not only do we do things like Supernova, but why is our planning process different? Not just that we do plans, why are we different? All right? Why in our implementation and our investment process, why are we different? So, for example, in planning, you'd be different because we don't just do a plan and then stick it on the shelf, right? We fully implement the plan. We help you as a coach, as a consultant, fully implement the plan. So we basically bug you to make sure you get the plan done so it's in your best interest. It is in your best interest to get it done. We're going to be there to make sure that you don't procrastinate. So we help you through our 12 scheduled appointments. 4 reviews of the plan, 2 of them in person. So that is a big differentiator between people that sell plans and people that guide people's lives, which is what you do. All right? So that's just one example of how you turn that five-star model, that particular star of what do we do differently? What do we do differently? Doing a cash flow analysis, doing an annual net worth statement. Those are really important things that would differentiate you in the market. So like when we do our reviews and we do an agenda and then an executive summary, that makes us very different from somebody that just calls 12 times a year. So when we do our planning, let's make sure we're doing a cash flow analysis on an annual basis, and we're doing a net worth statement on an annual basis. Does that make sense, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah, and Rob, we do a lot of this stuff, and our problem, or one of our problems, is like we do this, but we don't do it in a way that's presented. Like we're selling ourselves short by not formalizing it more.
We don't market it.
You don't market it.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, like I've made a whole living spreadsheet for client expenses that we send out to all new clients, that we always like get them to tell us what their monthly cash flows are. And, you know, we do a lot of this planning. I was just going through our financial plans. And honestly, I'm surprised at some of the names I've seen that don't have plans in place, which I thought did have plans in place.
So, Ryan, you know, look, it seems to me that I would go ahead and put Tim in charge of planning, and Tim, you run a spreadsheet on all the different, maybe I'm talking out of school here, but it seems like Ryan has got too much to do. And, if you.
That's a fair comment.
Yeah, and if you were able to take over the planning responsibilities, that would free Ryan up to do other things. And probably, frankly, you would have the time to do the job the way Ryan would like to have the job done. Okay? And to me, that would be critical. So you do a spreadsheet and you get everybody on there and you keep track of it and make sure everybody has a plan and they get it updated every year and they got a cash flow now. And then you go out and brag about it, right? Like Larry said, we don't market it. Come on. You're doing the work and not marketing it? What's wrong? Well, we don't use it in our presentation. Well, remember guys, you're not going to remember something unless you have process for remembering it. Right? You're not going to remember things unless you're presenting them in an order that will illuminate that for you and for the client or the center of influence. So in what can be a very formal way or a very informal way, always present yourself using the 5-star model. So when you're talking to a client about them and you're selling yourselves on why you're different, whether you're each presenting it or one person's presenting it, always use the 5-star model as a way of presenting what it is that you do and why you're different. And just think about how that flows, right? We do a financial plan for you, right? We fully implement the plan and go through that. And then what else do we do?
We have monitor the plan
process, right? That's our implementation of the plan. Then we have our client contact and rapid response to your problem, 1242 plus rapid response. And then we market ourselves. Why is that important? We want to be known and trusted in the community through our community involvement and and how we're different in the sense that we don't just do our thing. We also are involved in the community and we do things to make ourselves valuable to the community. And then we track ourselves through our leadership model and our vision of where we're going to be 5 years from now and our purpose statement, our vision of our mission statement for you.
It's planning, implementation, is it brand director, brand awareness,
brand,
marketing and leadership?
Brand management, yes. Marketing and leadership. And so those are all, you know, that's one continuous loop of your presentation. So you talk about, you know, your investment process and why that different. And then your 1242, why is that different? The three things that are most important to the client. But once sometimes they're interested in how you guys, you know, why do you do so well? Well, we've got a great structure. This is our structure. This is our process. Everything is process oriented. Everything is plan process.
So, Rob, we were talking a lot last week about what we wanted our dream day to look like and our dream practice. And to be brief, it sounds like everyone just wants to handle 30 rich people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hold on a second.
So Larry, you agree, eh? Handle 30 rich people? Is that your dream?
Yes. That is the dream. I think that's everybody's dream. Ideally, that's what we're trying to get to. That may not happen. But well, once again, we need to have that respective goal and kind of set it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a counterintuitive goal from the beginning of what we, war was better and want to do more business, open more accounts. Well, now that's different. Now we want fewer accounts, bigger accounts, and simplify our lives and focus, right?
Correct.
And so, yeah. And so what you do is you say, you know, one of the, when you set your minimums each year, remember we set our absolute minimum and our target minimum. But we also set our maximum and our target maximum. So we have the maximum number of clients that we'll take right now. And then our target. So every year you should not only set new minimums in terms of production assets and quality of clients and numbers, but you should set numbers of your target number of what you want your practice to look like. So now you've got, how many clients do you have now?
Me, I have around 75, I believe.
Okay, so 75 is where you are right now, right?
All right.
And so by next year, why don't we say you want to have 70?
All right.
Right? Or maybe 65.
Okay.
So you set a goal of what you want. I mean, does 70 didn't get you even to say anything. Maybe the number is 65. So you're not going to get to 30 by going from 75 to 30, right?
True. Right.
So next year.
But I keep whittling it down. You know, Tim's right. Been a big resource for us to help reduce some of the headcount as well.
Right. So if your target minimum, your absolute minimum is 2 million and your target minimum is 5 million. Next year, you want to make your absolute minimum 2.5 million and your target minimum 5.5 million. Okay.
Okay.
And then your absolute, maximum is still, you want to go from 75 to 65 with your target at 30.
Okay.
Hey guys, Bear, are you there?
Hey, sorry, Rob. Totally my fault. I got caught up in a family issue for a sec.
We're talking about minimums and maximums and just going back to creating the ideal practice. And Ryan suggested that the ideal practice for everybody is 30 clients each. And I said, great. Let's make progress on that rather than dreaming about it. So for Larry, his absolute maximum number of clients is 75 this year, and next year it will be 65. So next year at this time, he'll have no more than 65 clients. And the year after that will be 55, with a target of getting to 30. So rather than saying that would be nice, Let's make it real.
That's a smart strategy because it doesn't go from black to white.
Yeah, I mean, very few people that can go from 75 down to 30 and feel really comfortable about it. And now right. I have taken a pretty big whack to their revenue. So in this case, we can do it with and make it completely painless. I mean, if that's your goal, right? If that's not your goal, set a new goal.
So the other question that leads to is, you know, okay, if we're all going to be out of the office, being high powered, high net worth advisors and stuff, who runs the practice? You know, like, who's there? Is it Christine? Do we end up having to bring on an internal person? Tim, while he ramps up? I mean, you know, kind of what does that look like? And, you know.
Well, we all have to do our 12-4-2s, right? So there's being out of the office, and then there's making sure that 12-4-2s get done. Now, you can hire somebody to do 12-4-2s for you, or you can do them yourself. But every client gets a financial plan, full implementation of that planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to their problems. 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. So you need a rapid response team in the office ready to go. And you also need every client to get called in a formal way with an agenda and an executive summary every month. So you figure out how that gets done, who's paying for it, but that's what the maximum, that's the minimum you're going to do for clients, not the max. Okay. Larry,
it's
just you and I,
Larry. Yeah, everybody else is out, but yeah.
Well, everybody else is, you know.
I think they can hear us.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
you're fine, Ryan. So you hear what I'm saying? You guys, if somebody doesn't want to do 12-4-2, you hire somebody to do 12-4-2. And,
All right.
You know, because... I mean, I told you that story. A guy came up to me and said, I'd love, after a seminar, I did a big, you know, 300 person Supernova kickoff, came up and told me how much he loved Supernova. And I said, why? He said, well, I tried doing 12-4-2 and I hated it. So I just hired a guy and he does the calls and I go out and hunt for money, which is what I love doing. I said, congratulations. That's exactly what you should be doing. If you're good at it, you like it. Terrific. So now that's not going to, you know, there's a certain amount of client relationship that I think you should maintain, or the other guy could just walk off with your book, right? So I think you probably should connect periodically, but the idea of hiring somebody to do, I have a team in that I talked to today from Michigan that the gal really doesn't, can't do the 12-4-2. So she's hired a person to do 8 of the calls and she's going to do the 4 and 2, which is fine. We don't care, right? Who does it? What we care is that it get done or we have no brand. We can't brag about something we're not doing. And if every member of the team, isn't doing it, then we have no brand for the team. We're not, our service model is not determined by our best client, but by our worst client.
All right. So Larry, I'm going to cut you for a minute because Rob was talking about you dropping to 75 clients by the end of this year.
65.
Which, whatever. So Larry right now has 113 distinct mailing addresses in his practice, which means that he has between butlers and clients 113 people that have to be reached either quarterly or monthly. In order for Larry to get to 75, that's 40 people less. Quick math. Or maybe some butlers, maybe only has to talk. Maybe it's not that. No, I have to see how many are above and how many are our clients. Because theoretically, if you said 75 clients, that could be 65 clients and 40 butlers. So that means, is it 4-to-1 or 3-to-1 for the butlers?
3-to-1.
Okay, so he could have 55 clients and 30 butlers and 85 distinct mailing addresses in that scenario, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so Larry now has these 30 people that he needs to move. Some of them, I'd say of the 30 people, I would say that at least half of them will not even qualify at Tim's $500,000 level. So So are you suggesting that we just give them to another person and move on?
Well, Tim, didn't we just do that and $500,000 was the minimum? Wasn't that the number we set when you pulled up the rep code?
Yeah, but I think Ryan's talking about something different. Ryan's talking about clients that go into my rep code versus new clients that we bring in. And so for new clients that I'm going after, the $500,000 minimum threshold is what we're aiming for. Right. But as far as, you know, the relationships that are on our book, you know, that's a little bit tougher for reasons that Ryan and Larry, we've talked in depth about, just the relationships and the householding and different things of that nature. But, yeah.
Yeah, because we've done a lot of the easy cuts, Rob. I mean, Barry's down to Barry. I think Barry has 53 mailing addresses in his core number, and I have, I want to say, 65 mailing addresses in my core number. So
I've got the numbers here. It's Barry 52, Ryan 64, Larry 113.
Okay, so I was off by one on two people.
Well, I know you should be off by one, Ryan.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm slacking. I'm distracted. Now, we also have other inherited rep codes and such. So we've got another probably $50 million of accounts that are not in our core numbers, either through, like I said, new clients we brought on or other advisors leaving that we've picked up. So if we add another, let's just say we add another 7 or 8 onto each of those numbers, that's probably more close to where we're actually at. If I count like the Meckel family and Dorothy Snow and the three with Kim Kessing that we brought in. So I think we need to kind of figure out how we're going to step them to Tim and then what's not going to Tim right now, you know, because we do have revenue concerns that we are dealing with. And Rob, the numbers are so goddamn aggravating because, you know, we're finally on team comp, by the way. You know, Barry and I and Larry qualified for team comp finally because we've grown so much this year. And now they're moving the numbers on us again in October, you know, for October. So we should be good through the year, but next year when they reset the levels, I don't know if we'll still qualify. So that's been another hesitation of giving up a lot of business because it could push down the payout grids noticeably. We're on a threshold there as well. So, in your opinion, where do you think? So for people that have 250,000 that are related to our largest clients, we have to keep them. So those people are going to be with him for now, I assume, or, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So where this, you know, get the next level of things is like, okay, you know, positioning within the team, if Larry goes down to 65 people, his smallest client at that stage would have, let's say, you know, $750,000 probably. Still well below our stated minimums and such. So we should still have a lot of continuous cleaning to go, so to speak. You know, I would say each of us, you know, Larry probably has 30 or, I don't know, Larry, what do you have, 30, probably 35 clients have a million or more?
Or what?
How many clients do you think have a million or more in your book?
Yeah, probably 30, 35, 30 to 40.
You know, we're in a situation where we're going to turn over almost our whole practice at some point, is the way it sounds. You know, or we can continue to grow them.
Right.
I can get that.
Nothing would be more lovely than to turn over your whole practice.
Yeah, I know, for the emotion.
I mean, you completely outgrow your skin. You completely outgrow all the million-dollar clients. Goodbye. I love you. And we're on.
I had a client say to me the other day. She was worried that I was going to leave her, and not continue to work with her. And she's got $5 million, so she should be good for a while.
Right.
But yeah, you have exactly 35 at a million or more, and the other another 5 or 6 at 900,000 or more. So.
Well, the reality is, truthfully, it wouldn't hurt you much to get down to 35 clients. It wouldn't be that hard. And probably financially, it wouldn't be that big a deal. Maybe it would, but anyway, the point is not all the details. The point is the direction and that you get it. Okay. That's the most important thing. You guys work out the details. I'll give you my advice but you guys know your market. You know who, but when you bring in a $10 million client, you get rid of a bunch of little guys. Okay. You bring in a $5 million client, you get rid of a bunch of little guys. That's what you want to be doing constantly. So you bring in one, you get rid of five. And so you're constantly upgrading the experience that you're getting as well as your existing clients are getting.
So in terms of structuring the team, people having a very difficult time envisioning is like, okay, like I told you, we talked to a guy, he's the hunter and his other guy's the inside guy, and that's their setup. It's cool. Hunter and inside guy. You know, where the hunter goes out and gets the relationship, inside guy runs the relationship and runs the book, so to speak. As you alluded to before, everyone has to maintain their own relationships. Otherwise, you basically are just building someone else's practice for them. So, you know, in terms of knowing what you know about our team and in terms of structuring and staying in our lane, years ago, I started doing the money management out of necessity kind of thing. Over the last few years, it's turned out really well. Like, I was on a call with another advisor today that had two clients that have money with us, over another $500,000 from the existing relationship, and now the two trustees are talking about bringing over their money for this guy. Like, we're talking about bringing in like another $1 million for him on top of the $500,000 that we're already converting over. And the other trustees got $7 million outside. So, I mean, it's getting to where this is not just a necessity, it's now a marketing tool and a weapon that we can deploy, and it's a differentiator as well.
Sure.
You know, like we built out some stock strategies and Tim, you know, Tim has been integral in the models and the success of the models as well. And we're debating, you know, do we give Tim some strategies to cut his teeth on and get more, you know, used to running solo with some of the stuff? Because I'm now in a situation where I'm gathering assets as well. And it's like, how do I split my time? You know, right. Because, you know, like, this is not in a bragging manner, but like we're now to $100 million in the discretionary strategies. On average here, our accounts are outperforming the Dow by probably 7 to 8%. And we've got a $40 million sleeve that's up 13.5 year to date when the S&P is up, you know, five and, I'm sorry, not 13. What are we at, Tim? 22 year to date?
It's over 20.
Yeah, so we're beating the market 15% this year on $40 million, which is, what, $6 million, or at 1.3%, that's another $1,000 of revenue that we're collecting due to the outperformance. And we've got outperformance across all of our strategies. So we have $100 million, and if we're outperforming an average of, you know, 7 or 8%, that's adding another $70,000, $80,000, you know, which is not just good that we're doing that and scaling our practice, but it's also additive in that manner as well. How much of our time do we commit to that? Because adding $70,000 or $80,000 in revenue is like getting a couple of as well.
Sure. So, you read in my chapter, Radical Delegation, the only reason
I just got the book delivered yesterday. I'm rereading the book in hardcover format. I will be taking notes.
Well,
highlighter.
Basically, you give until it hurts. Okay? You delegate until the person can't handle it anymore, and then their job is to find somebody else to delegate their other work to. So Tim gets overwhelmed. Tim finds somebody to delegate to. And that's the way business is. I mean, one guy told me, I don't think I can take another office. You know, you can't give me any more offices. I'm full up. I said, that'd be like if my boss came to me and said, you can't have me. You know, I told him, I can't take on any more states when I was running the Midwest. I never said no. I had 14 states that I was covering. Well, how did I manage that? I simply got a really good person and I put him in charge of the state. And then he got really good people and they each managed each office. And then we didn't have to worry, right? So yes, you have to instill your culture and you have to hold people accountable, and it takes time, and you got to consult and you got to answer their questions and help them, encourage them, and coach them. So you, it's not an infinite number of people you can manage, but I could manage 14. So you guys can manage more than a few. If you need people, you hire them and you train them and you hold them accountable.
So do you think we hire somebody, or like, we've got a guy that works with us that's like 70.
Yeah, I've got a call coming up here, so I got to jump off. But do you hire somebody? Yes. You hire somebody depending on what Tim's capacity is and what everybody else's capacity is. That's called leadership. So
just real quick, we've got a 72-year-old guy that does a lot of joint work with us that's probably going to sell his practice to us or move with us or do whatever. Would he be someone that would be good to feed smaller accounts to?
Would he be?
Yes.
No, not if he's leaving.
No, I mean, like, if he would sell us his practice.
If he sold the practice to us, then you give those small accounts to somebody else on your team, and you keep the big ones.
Right. No, I'm just saying, like, would it be better to instead of us paying to hire someone else, would it be better to hand those accounts off to him and keep a split and help him as opposed to us paying somebody else to come in and having another mouth to feed that's all on our heads?
Who's him?
The guy that is older that works with us.
The guy that's going to sell you his business, you're going to give him more small accounts?
Well, I'm saying eventually, at the end of the line, you'll probably do that.
Yeah, no, that's a really bad idea. You don't want to do anything that's temporary. You want to have permanent fixes to problems.
Okay. It sounds like I'm at the point where I'm Tim and I can't handle anymore, so I'm ready to hand shit off is what it sounds like. You know, like the whole conversation... Like, I feel like a lot has been delegated to me, and I'm reaching my point where I'm like, okay, I've been delegated till it hurts, and now I'm hurting, and I want
to. Don't be afraid to hire people to make your life better. That's what the game is. You hire really good people, and you hold them accountable. And does that take time? Yes. Does it take management? Yes. If you don't want to do that, then you give accounts away and don't mess with them and know it's going to cost you some money. If you hire somebody, it's going to cost you some time and money. If you gave them away, it's going to cost you a little bit of money because you gave away the revenues. Either way, to solve your problem, it's going to cost you. Otherwise, keep the problem and don't complain.
On small accounts, why don't we give them to back to Kundra?
Fuck him.
Okay.
Well, and I think one of the elephants in the room is I was that hire that came aboard to help you guys with your smaller size accounts. And Rob, we've been talking not in depth, but more topically about how we haven't done a great job in handing off those accounts. They're in my rep code. They're helping with my revenue. I'm very happy and fortunate that these guys are helping me out. And they're being honest with everything that they said they've done even before I got hired. But the one piece of the puzzle that we're missing is a legitimate handoff for, client Mr. and Mrs. Smith going from Ryan to Tim. The execution of that transition has been less than stellar.
Tim, there's a chapter in a book about this that we're going to have to reread, and that is the answer.
Yeah, and I'll reread that chapter as well. But Rob, that's what we're coming up against, because – people are so used to talking to Larry about everything, and they don't see themselves as being a small account. And it's, they're good old boys, and they've known Larry for 30, 40, 50 years. And it's he's on their speed dial. And so when, insert Tim, they're like, yeah, Tim, you're a cool guy, but Larry's my dude. And so they don't even feel comfortable with giving me simple instructions on things. And I try. When I answer the phone, I'm like, oh, I know you're my rep code. I don't say that, but I'm thinking it. I know you're in my rep code. I'm going to try to BS with you. I'm going to try to smooth you a little bit. what can I do for you? How can I help? I'm part of the team. I've been here for a couple of years now.
Yeah, you guys have got to make a nice handoff. You can do a webinar handoff. You can do a Zoom handoff. You can do, but you hand it off to Tim. Tim takes responsibility. Tim runs the show. When they call you, you answer the question and then refer them back to Tim. You're not rude, but you just say, hey, if you don't mind from now on, I'd appreciate it if you'd call Tim on this. And just, you know, do it.
So how we've been positioning is essentially for those clients that were shuffling into my number, we're basically taking the quote unquote team approach where, you know, Ryan or Larry, I'm still
your financial advisor. That's bullshit. Okay. Tim, that's bullshit. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not team approach. It's called nobody's in charge.
Yep.
Okay, so stop. I told you what to do. Now go
Got
do it. Stop. You guys spend a lot of time dealing with crap that it's simple. You hand it off and you run it then. You got to be good at delegating. It isn't, oh, we're both jointly going to do this. That means two guys are digging a hole where there's room for one. That's really uncomfortable and it doesn't work. No more. Okay? We got that problem solved. Let's take up another one next month. Okay? I don't want to hear about this one the next time. Over.
Yeah, we can all make that. We can all help Tim and make better handoffs. There's no question about it.
Yes.
All three of us can do that.
Go fix the ones that have been handed off. Okay, that's your project for the month. Fix the ones that have been handed off. So Tim knows what he owns, and he owns them. He's going to be in charge, and he's in charge. Okay? Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, sir.